Well, good morning, Crosspoint. It's good to be here with you. And when Trey was speaking those words, it reminds me of a speaker I heard being introduced one day. And they said some nice things about him. And when he stood up to speak, he meant to say, "I appreciate that introduction, but I don't deserve it." And he got his words turned around and he said, "I deserve that introduction, but I don't appreciate it." Well, I appreciate that introduction, but I don't deserve it. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here in your beautiful town. And in some ways, it's a bit of a return for me because I spent the first 3 years of my life, even though I only remember little tiny snippets, in New England, and some of it in Northborough, Massachusetts, just, 30 or 40 minutes from here. And so I have a soft spot in my heart for this part of the country, and certainly that's grown because of Trey and Bailey's association here. And I'm grateful to finally meet some of you and to be here with you today. And I just want to say thank you. I want to thank you, first of all, for allowing me the privilege of speaking, and I say something to Shan about that, for allowing me and trusting me to be in this on this platform today. And I want to say something to all of you in regard to my gratitude for your love to Trey and Bailey and to Griffith and Shepherd. When I come to Mansfield, Massachusetts, I am visiting some of the people that I love most on this planet. And I get to see Trey, too, when I come. So it's always good, and appreciate your willingness to be here today and to listen. Now, I come from the state of Indiana. There's a lot of deer hunting on, that goes on there. On any given morning, I can wake up and see five or six deer out in the yard. And I heard this story the other day about a doctor and a lawyer and a preacher who decided to go deer hunting together. And they got up in the stand, and they're waiting, and all of a sudden a big buck comes into the clearing, and they realized at that moment that they had not discussed beforehand who would be allowed to take the first shot. And so all three of them, the doctor and the lawyer and the preacher, fired at the same time, and the buck went down, and immediately an argument ensued. The lawyer said it was his slug that took the buck down, and the doctor said, "No, it was his." And the preacher, of course, said, "No, I'm the one that shot the buck." And they argued violently, and finally they had to call in the game warden to settle their differences. And so the game warden just walked over and took one look at the buck, walked back to the doctor and the lawyer and the preacher, and said, "It's very obvious this buck belongs to the preacher." And the doctor and the lawyer, of course, begin to protest. "How can you tell just by walking over there and taking one look at that buck that the preacher's slug got it instead of our slug?" And the game warden said, "Well, it's easy." He said, "The slug just went in one ear and out the other." So I'm hoping that today, what little bit I have to say to you doesn't just go in one ear and out the other. I hear voices. Elijah did. He had just had his best day ever. But he was hearing voices. Now, some of you may know all about Elijah. Others may be just now being introduced to him for the first time. So just to make sure you understand, I want to tell you just a little bit about Elijah. Elijah is one of the most prominent people in the Bible. He's one of the most prominent prophets in the Old Testament. He was the leader of what was called the school of the prophets. He had the ability to foretell the future. He was a miracle worker. Once he created an endless food supply for a widow. On several occasions, he called down fire from heaven. He was able to control the weather with his prayers. He even raised someone from the dead, and once he parted the waters like Moses did. Let me just say it this way about Elijah, if you're not too familiar with him. He was a big-time, powerful man of God, and he was a mentor to another prophet named Elisha, who was even greater than he was. But perhaps what you need to know most of all about Elijah is that he spent his life fighting against the prophets of a false god, an idol, named Baal. Because God's people were tempted to worship this false god, Baal. And he ministered, Elijah did, in a time when his worst enemies were the king and the queen. The king, you might recognize his name, was a king named Ahab. The queen, you'll probably recognize her name for sure, was Jezebel. And Ahab and Jezebel were enemies. They were Baal worshipers, and they were enemies of the people of God, and they were certainly enemies of Elijah. And they were two of the most evil people on the planet. But Elijah was hearing voices. But he was hearing voices on the best day that he ever had. In fact, he had a contest with the priests or the prophets of Baal, and he completely humiliated all 450 prophets of Baal. It was perhaps the biggest victory of his life. And on his best day ever, as he was hearing voices, I want you to see what he did. 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 1. Now Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. And then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So may the gods do to me and even more if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time." And Elijah was afraid. And he arose and he ran for his life. And he came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah. He left his servant there. But he himself went about a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die. And he said, "It is enough now, O Lord. Take my life from me, for I am not better than my father's." Okay, Elijah, let's get this straight. You just survived a 3-year all-points bulletin, price on your head, no holds barred, kingdom-wide search. You just decisively decimated Baal's priests, and you won what will become known as the contest of the ages. You saw the direct evidence of the power of God as fire came down from heaven at your request. You convinced the people of God that God was God. You just had one of the most miraculous, effective prayer life experiences in the entire Bible. You just saw rain quench the land after 3 years of total drought. You sent your arch enemy, wicked King Ahab, running with his tail between his legs back home to mama. You won an incredible 17-mile foot race against Ahab's royal horses and chariots. You just watched God keep his specific promises, and your leadership and prophetic authenticity were unquestionably vindicated and validated. And you're hearing voices. And you're ready to wave the white flag of surrender. You're ready to give up. In fact, Elijah, you're so low and so depressed that you think you'd be better off dead and you're asking to die. Shall we beat Elijah up for his depression? Or can we give him a break? I'm of the mindset today that we should give Elijah a break. Because his depression was not about Jezebel. This is the cumulative effect of years of ministry and service and burdens and observation and the grief, harsh realities of life, of living life on the run, of looking over his shoulder, of trying to do the right thing, of being a conduit of God's power, and he's exhausted and he's scared and he's stressed and he's cynical and he's wrung out and he's spent and he's vulnerable. He was the great prophet of God, yes, but he was also, the Bible says, a man with a nature like ours. In other words, he was just an ordinary human being, just like we are. I heard a song recently called "No Fight Left," and that's where Elijah was, at least emotionally. He had no fight left, and he wanted to die. One day, our Lord Jesus was walking through a crowd, and there was a woman who saw him. She had a lifelong ailment or illness, and she just thought in her mind, if I could just reach out and touch the hem of his garment, then it would make me well. So she elbowed her way through the crowd and all the jostling people around her, and she reached out and she touched the hem of his cloak, and immediately she was healed. But what's interesting is what Jesus said at this point. In Luke chapter 8, Jesus said, "Who touched me? Who's the one that just touched me?" And they were all denying it, and Peter said, "Master, there's people crowding and pressing all around you." But Jesus said, "Someone did touch me because I was aware that the power had gone out of me." You know, even when we do the right things, when we're living life and even trying to serve God, power goes out of us. Jesus handled that perfectly, but Elijah isn't Jesus, is he? And neither are you, and neither am I. And I'm wondering if it's possible that I'm talking to anyone here today. Is there anyone here today that, within the sound of my voice, that suffers from discouragement or depression or anxiety? And you feel guilty about it because, like Elijah, it's cumulative and it doesn't make sense because there seems to be no objective reasons for it. Or you think that even if there are reasons for it, you shouldn't feel that way. You realize, don't you, that depression happens even to spiritual people. And it happens sometimes after great moments. Satan tried to tempt Jesus right after Jesus' baptism. Sometimes it's situational, more often it's internal, and it doesn't always even have to make sense. I don't know if you've noticed, but I certainly have, where I live, that people are dropping like flies. I mean, they're tapping out, they're throwing in the towel, they're quitting their jobs. Some people are leaving the church or walking away or they're isolating themselves. They're just done. In fact, you can pick up the news and they call it the Great Resignation or the Big Quit. Last year, 69 million people quit their jobs. And we usually explain it with generalized statements like, well, why work when you can make more staying home? Or they just got out of the habit, or it just shows they were never really committed in the first place. And there may be some elements of truth in that, but I believe there are other deeper reasons. People are stressed. They're tired. They're discouraged. They're depressed. They've given up hope. They're given up. I hear voices. Elijah heard four voices. The first voice that he heard was the voice of wicked Queen Jezebel. Actually, it was her messenger's voice, and you might even say it was Satan's voice. We already read it in verse 2, but look at it again. Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So may the gods do to me and even more if I don't make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time." Jezebel, even after this tremendous victory, terrified Elijah. She did it with tools of intimidation and insecurity and inadequacy and shame and terror and weariness. And I once heard a preacher suggest that Elijah should have addressed Jezebel more like he did Ahab. And if he had, it would have gone something like this. Elijah said to the messenger, "You go back to Jezebel and you tell her, 'Jezebel, you get out of my face. I defeated your prophets of Baal and I've called down fire from heaven. Do you think I'm going to walk away and be scared because of an old hag like you? Get behind me, Satan.'" But no, he heard voices. One simple sentence from Jezebel strikes terror in the heart of the man of God and sends him running. I hear voices. The next verse, the voice that Elijah hears, is his own voice. And I don't know about you, but I've come to realize that sometimes my own voice is the worst when I listen to my own voice. And so Elijah's listening to his own voice. The problem is he's telling himself the wrong thing. Verse 4, he went about a day's journey into the wilderness and he came and he sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die. And he said, "It is enough now, O Lord, take my life, for I'm not better than my father's." So here's this man of God sitting under a juniper tree, otherwise known as a broom tree, used by desert travelers as a refuge from the sun. By the way, the root of a juniper tree yields a hard charcoal that can give out heat, and you could chew on the root of this broom tree for nourishment as a last resort. So he sits down under this broom tree like Jonah sat down under his gourd, and he asked God to kill him. "God, I'd just be better off dead. Would you just take my life? I'm no better off than my father's." And I heard someone say one time, this is the prayer of Elijah. It's not like the prayer of Jabez. It's hardly the kind of prayer you'd put on a plaque and hang on your wall. "Hey God, I'm a loser and I want to die." But he's hearing voices, you see. And he's not just hearing the voice of Jezebel, he's hearing his own voice, and he's not speaking the truth to himself. I hear voices. The next voice he hears is the voice of an angel. Verse 5, he lay down, slept under a juniper tree, and behold, there was an angel touching him And he said to him, "Arise, eat." And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a bread cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. So Elijah ate, and he drank, and he sat down again. And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you." You know, there are some common practical remedies when we're down, when we're depressed, and the angel even points to some. Take some food, get some sleep, get some rest, take action, correct your words, do a little self-talk. He's now hearing the voice of an angel, and the angel's giving him good advice. But here's another voice. Finally, there is the voice of God. Verse 8, he arose, he ate and he drank, went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to a place called Horeb, the mountain of God. And there he came to a cave, and he lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He said, "I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the sons of Israel, and have forsaken your covenant. They've forsaken your covenant. They've torn down your altars. They've killed your prophets with the sword. And I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away." Now, just an aside here, don't let me lose you during this, but I want to stop here for a moment, and I want to ask, does anyone here recognize where Elijah now is? Does anyone get a sense of sacred history and deja vu? He's at a place called Mount Horeb, or Horeb, the mountain of God. Does that ring any bells? Maybe if I tell you this, Mount Horeb is another name for Mount Sinai. This is where God spoke to Moses in the burning bush. It's where God's people had an earlier run-in with idolatry with the golden calf. It's where instructions for the construction of the tabernacle were given. It's the place where Moses got the Ten Commandments. It's where Moses struck the rock and the water came out. It's where God showed Moses his glory and then sheltered him in the cleft of the rock, and Moses had to cover his face. I mean, this place, Mount Horeb, it may have been out in the middle of nowhere, but it was somewhere. In fact, one commentator says, all told, some 63 chapters of the Old Testament are devoted to the events that took place at Mount Sinai or Horeb. That amounts to 14% of the 436 narrative historical chapters from Genesis to Esther. And this is where Elijah finds himself. And he's hearing voices. I hear voices. God spoke again, verse 11. God said, "Go forth and stand on the mountain before the Lord." And behold, the Lord was passing by, and a great and strong wind was rending the mountain and breaking in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of a gentle blowing. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle, and he went out, and he stood at the entrance of the cave, and behold, a voice came to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Now make sure you see this picture. The Lord's passing by with wind so strong that it broke rocks, but he wasn't in the wind. And an earthquake on the mountain, but God wasn't in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but God wasn't in the fire. But after the fire, a still, small voice. A gentle blowing. Can you hear it? Now, you got to know this about Elijah. Elijah was a fighter. He thrived on the sensational and the miraculous. He usually made a big splash. His voice was heard and known. I mean, he's a boom shakalaka kind of guy. But God speaks to him in a whisper. And I wonder if it's the same cleft of the rock where Moses heard from God. See, here's the deal today. Satan sends you messages. You send yourself messages. And God sends you messages. And you keep receiving and replaying and processing the messages. But sometimes we don't discern whose voice we're listening to. So Elijah's hearing voices. God keeps speaking. verse 15, the Lord said to him, go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you've arrived, you shall anoint Hazael, king of Aram, and Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint king over Israel, and Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint as prophet in your place. And it shall come about, the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael, Jehu shall put to death. The one who escapes from the sword of Jehu, Elisha shall put to death. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. I want to make sure we hear these three messages from God to Elijah today. Now here's the first one. Make sure you hear this, because it's not just for Elijah, it's for you. You are not done. You may be depressed today. You may feel like giving up. You may be tired of everything you see around you. I heard Rick Russo say the other day, in 2020, we thought we signed up for a marathon, and then we were at the finish line, 26 miles, chugging water, and we were told we still had to swim for 2.4 miles and then bike another 112 miles, and here's 2022, and it feels like the same thing's still going on. And we're just done with it. But you are not done. 19-year-old Kevin Hines is a gentleman that I met last year. He's one of over 2,000 people who have made the suicide leap off the Golden Gate Bridge. But he's also one of only 26 people who have survived the jump. And his story is powerful. In fact, in his testimony, he says the same thing that 18 other survivors have said in one way or another. He said that the millisecond after he launched himself over that rail, he felt instant regret. In fact, he thought, I don't want to die. God, help me. And at that fleeting moment, as his body plunged at 75 miles an hour, 25 stories toward the water, he realized that no one would know that at the last minute, he actually changed his mind. And somehow, by the grace of God, he survived. He's recovered from his injuries, and he's dealing with his issues. And since then, his life has become rich and meaningful. You are so not done, no matter how you feel today, no matter what fears you have, because fear is a liar. And you are so not done. Second message, you're not alone. And by the way, it's not just about you. Two or three times Elijah repeats his dilemma. Kevin Hines that I just told you about, he said, I thought nobody cared, but I realized that a lot of people cared. A lot of people care. You are so not alone. In fact, God told Elijah, you think you're the only one left serving me, but there's 7,000 other people who have not yet bowed the knee to Baal. There's 7,000 other people like you. You are not alone. That's why this is so important. You are so not alone. The third thing that God said to Elijah, that he says to us today, is you are not going to believe what I will do. Can I put that in the redneck version? You ain't seen nothing yet. You are so not going to believe what God can do. God said, Elijah, I'm going to use an enemy, Hazael, to accomplish my will. I'm going to use a crazy chariot driver named Jehu to finish off Jezebel. I'm going to provide you with a successor named Elisha, who's going to be twice as good as you are, to continue the work with the school of the prophets. And I'm going to use Obadiah and 7,000 other people who are still faithful to me to get my job done. You say, wow, it doesn't get any better than this. You want to bet? It's God saying to Elijah, you are so not going to believe what I can do. Imagine with me for a moment, what if when Elijah sat down under that juniper tree and said, God, I just want to die, I'm a loser. Imagine what Elijah would have missed if he had gotten his wish underneath that tree. I want to die. I mean, maybe you need to know a little bit more about the life of Elijah. Do you remember how his Old Testament career ended? 2 Corinthians 2:11, they were going along and talking, and behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, which separated the two of them, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. It's one of the most famous scenes in the Bible. That would have never happened if God would have given him his wish and allowed him to die underneath that tree. It doesn't get any better than that. You say, well, you want to bet? Turn to the New Testament. Remember, Jesus is walking along one day. He's got his three closest disciples, Peter, James, and John, with him. Look what happens. Mark chapter 9, verse 2. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, brought them up on a high mountain by themselves. He was transfigured before them. His garments became radiant and exceedingly white, as no launderer on earth can whiten them. And Elijah appeared to them. Elijah appeared to them along with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. That would have never happened if God would have granted his wish when he was depressed and allowed him to die under that juniper tree. Now, just a side note, and I'll just do this real quick. God sent Elijah back to the wilderness of Damascus. The great apostle Paul was stricken on the road to Damascus, and then he spent time with Jesus in a place called the wilderness of Arabia. And Galatians 4:25 says that Mount Sinai is in Arabia. So one writer makes this parallel. When Elijah saw himself as having failed, he ran off to Sinai in Arabia to give up, but he was actually re-encouraged. Paul ran off to Sinai, perhaps to give up his calling as a leader in the Jewish community, but wound up being prepared to become a great leader in the church. But the same voice that assured Elijah invited Paul to come and discern his vocation far away from the busy places of man. Imagine what Elijah would have missed if he had gotten his wish, I want to die. You are so not done. You are so not alone. And you are so not going to believe what God can still do with your life. So back to me and you. We can't stay under that juniper tree. We have to go to Horeb. And we can't stay at Mount Horeb. We have to go to Damascus. And we won't be at Damascus forever. Our chariot awaits, and later a transfiguration on the mountain with Moses and Jesus. How about a few pointers from Elijah's journey to help us with our own? Because we might know these things are true, but we still don't feel like they're true. That we're not done. That we're not alone. And that God can still do greater things with our lives. So what if we took some pointers from Elijah here? First of all, first pointer is this one. Just take care of yourself. The angel said, arise, eat, drink, sleep. Let me ask you something someone once asked me. Do you become holier and nicer and more encouraging and healthy and productive when you're tired? There's an acronym. It's HALT, H-A-L-T. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Depression is not just a spiritual problem. It's a physical problem. It's a physiological problem. In his book, The Struggle is Real, Michael Lyles, MD, says that in one clinical day, he saw symptoms of depression in different patients caused by different things. Diabetes, anemia, medication side effects, thyroid, sleep apnea, brain injury, vitamin D deficiency, hormonal problems. Our internal systems are interdependent, and to characterize all anxiety or depression as some sort of spiritual deficiency is physiologically and theologically inaccurate at best, and it's harsh and it's unkind and it's destructive at worst. And for those of you that never get down and never feel depression, let me just say, just because you haven't felt it yourself doesn't mean it isn't real. I mean, Elijah is so down, and the first thing the angel says is, arise, eat. Take care of yourself. And then he gets some more sleep. Second, Elijah is told to prepare himself. In other words, Elijah, don't underestimate the journey. This is a marathon, not a sprint. And because our emotional and mental health issues are complex, simplistic shortcut solutions don't often help. It's true that we can heal and cope, but it's not always an instantaneous thing. God told Elijah that it would be a long journey. So a caveat here, this is no quick fix or easy answer. You prepare yourself. The third thing you do is you understand yourself. You answer some hard questions. Just like the question that God asked to Elijah. Elijah, why are you here? Maybe you need to sit down and identify some of the Jezebels in your life. To what and to who are you most vulnerable? One time I sat down, I made a list of my 10 things. What are the things that trigger me? What are the things that ruin my spiritual confidence? When do I get like this? What is it that just always sucks the life out of me? And the more I know myself and the more I understand myself, the more I can take care of myself and prepare myself. The third thing, or the fourth thing, is to position yourself. You go where you can hear the voice of God and listen. And that might mean some solitude, some journaling, prayer, music, scripture. One of the places I like to go is to the Psalms. That's one of the reasons God gave them to us. Position yourself so that you can hear the voice of God instead of just listening to your own voice or listening to the voice of the Jezebels around you. And then you surrender yourself. You say, Jesus, you're my king, and I'm going to follow you wherever you lead. How many of you heard this statement? It's often said that, in fact, you could probably finish it, right? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting a different result. You heard that before? Well, the definition, we say it with great power and authority. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, but expecting a different result. That's a famous statement for a reason. The reason it's famous is because it's true in many cases. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting a different result. But what if the same thing you are doing over and over again is the right thing, and it's the thing God said to do? That's not a definition of insanity. That's a definition of obedience and endurance. What happens when you keep telling the truth, even when you're ridiculed and rejected? What happens when you keep asking for forgiveness even when you sin? What happens when you keep telling people about Jesus even when they won't listen? What happens when you keep on doing what God said even when you look out of touch? What happens when you keep on praying even when the answer doesn't seem to come? What happens when you keep on praising even when the pain's still there? What happens when you keep on forgiving even if the offender's not repenting yet? What happens when you keep believing even though the doubts are seeping in? What happens when you keep the door open even when the prodigal doesn't come home? What happens when you keep on loving and doing the right thing and staying in there and putting one foot in front of the other? I never thought that there would be a day that I would stand in a pulpit and quote the politician, Ross Perot. But here goes. Ross Perot said this: most people give up when they're just about ready to achieve success. They quit on the 1 yard line, and they give up at the last minute of the game, 1 foot away from a winning touchdown. My preacher friend Tom Burgess said, just do the next right thing. The writer of James says, blessed is a person who endures trials, because when he passes the test, he'll receive a crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. See, I'm thinking that endurance is one of the most important things we can cultivate in 2022. It's not time to give up. It's not time to back off. It's not time to cower in fear. It's not time to lie down and die. It's not time for our concession speech. It's not time to fold. It's not time to head for the hills. It's not time to hunker in the bunker. It's not time to hesitate and lie low. It's not time to be silent. It's not time to acquiesce or accommodate or compromise or capitulate. It's not time to dilute or water down or surrender. It's not time for retreat. It's not time to go into hiding. It's not time for the white flag. It is time for the kingdom banner to fly high. It's time for us to start listening to the right voices. It's time for us to program even our own voices in our own self-talk to say, His grace covers me. His Spirit lives in me. His angels surround me. His power is infused in me. His love flows through me. His Word is in me. His blessings are on me. His promises are with me. His work is for me. His presence is beside me. His hands under me, holding me. Why do we often feel like giving up and letting go? Satan, stop messing with me. I won't let go. I want to let go, but I won't let go. There are battles to fight by day and night for God and the right, and I'll never let go. I won't let go, but I won't let go. I'm sick, it's true, worried and blue and worn through and through, but I won't let go. I want to let go, but I won't let go. I'll never yield. What, lie down on the field and surrender my shield? No, I'll never let go. Man, I want to let go, but I won't let go. May this be my song mid legions of wrong. Oh, God, keep me strong, that I may never let go. Anybody here today feel like giving up? Don't do it. Yeah. Wouldn't it be so easy to quit? Please keep going. You tired, overwhelmed, weary, depressed? Stay on your feet. The outcome is better than you could ever imagine. One foot in front of the other. Keep moving toward the finish. You're still standing. Lean into the pain. Get back up if you're down. Call on Christ. Access the Spirit's reserve. Run to the Father. Get that second wind. Think of the cloud of witnesses that's watching. Consider Jesus. Lean on each other. Imagine the end and run your race. I hear voices. We all hear voices. Just make sure that you're listening to the right voice. Lord, thank you. Thank you for talking to us. Thank you for your word that speaks into our lives when we allow it. Thank you for speaking to us in the still, small whisper, not just in the big, sensational things. Thank you for the life and the example of Elijah, and for reminding us later in Scripture that he was just an ordinary human being with passions like ours, and yet he wanted to quit. Lord, strengthen us, fill us with your grace and with your Spirit, and help us to keep putting one foot in front of the other, because we know the best is yet to come. Thank you for that. In Jesus' name, amen.